descending from atop the highest mountains of pop culture and delivering the knowledge of media you seek. This is the Geek Peek Podcast. Descending from atop the highest mountains of pop culture and delivering the knowledge of media you seek.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Geek Peek Podcast, the nexus of all pop culture knowledge, news, and recommendations. This week, we'll be delving into the past and uncovering some of the movies, shows, books, and games that turned us into the horror fanatics that we are today.
Listeners, beware. You're in for a scare.
My name is Brandon Lanis, and I'm joined by my co-hosts, Chris Melvin and Trent Sherrod. How are you boys doing today?
I'm doing fantastic, Brandon. Thank you for asking. How you doing, Chris?
I'm doing well, guys. It's great to hear from you guys. Cheers to another night on the pod, and hello to our listeners.
Cheers. Clink.
Mm-hmm. Clink, clink. Make sure everyone follow us at facebook.com, Geek Peek Podcast. You can also find us on Twitter and Instagram at Geek Peek Pod. And if you're feeling super generous, go on over to Apple and throw us a little 5-star rating. You know what I'm saying? You like our content? Hit us up with that 5 stars or any stars. I mean, we don't care. All traction's good traction. Right? So let's get into some drinks of the week. Chris, what are you sipping on tonight?
So tonight I tried something new. It's called the Pseudo Sue Pale Ale. Now, it jumped out at me. I was looking in the beer store, and I'm looking around the shelves, and there was a bunch of craft beers, and just nothing was really jumping out at me. And Emily walks in, and she's like, I'm like, there's nothing really in here that really is speaking to me. And she points at this case, and she's like, that one doesn't it? And it's this gigantic T-Rex, like, roaring at me. And I'm like, all right. So it's got a big ass purple and green T-Rex on the front of it. It's
is it a Barney beer?
Is it no? No, he looks, if Barney was ferocious, maybe. Now that I'm seeing the purple and green, that's it's coming to mind. But it's Toppling Goliath Brewing Company from Iowa, actually. Decorah, Iowa. Yeah. So they serve it in pints. So I'm sipping on it. It's actually pretty good. But I never have had it and probably would never have gotten it without seeing the big purple and green T-Rex. So check out our social media to see what I'm talking about.
Yeah, it just goes to show a good can with some sweet art can easily sell to us boys.
Oh, dude, anytime I'm into a wine or something... I've been guilty of it. See an awesome can, yeah, I'll just be like, oh, I'm buying this. Sounds good.
Yeah, in fact, I'm guilty of it this week as well. I'm sipping on Clown Shoes. Rainbows Are Real. So this is a hazy New England style IPA, straight out of Massachusetts, 7%. It's good. It's a little different. I've never had this one before. It's pretty hoppy, not gonna lie. But what really caught me was just the imagery on the can. It's a vibrant sunset with two little clown people looking up at it. They almost look like robot clown people. But yeah, I'd recommend it. It's in my backlog of beers that I've been meaning to get around to. So finally get
this is giving me
to try this one out.
A great idea. I have been thinking a lot recently about getting a at-home brew kit. It started during quarantine because I'm like, well, what else am I going to do? But we happen to have a really cool logo developed by a really cool friend of ours. And I would love to make a beer and slap that logo on a bad boy.
Geek Peek beer. That would be sick. Uh-oh. We got something brewing.
Oh. Trent, you got something a little bit different and special tonight. What are you sipping on?
I do. By the way, can you guys hear the thunder going around in the background over here?
I did.
I heard the rumblies.
Speaking of something brewing, we got a crazy storm of brewing over here. Ha ha. Okay. I am doing a flight. My beautiful bride-to-be found these really cool flight stands with glasses at Target in like the $5 section. And I didn't want to go super carb and calorie heavy with craft beers. I mean, I really wanted to, but I didn't. So I'm doing a seltzer flight. I chose four different seltzers, or four different companies, all the same flavor. So I have Bud Light Seltzer, Mighty Swell, which most people probably haven't heard of Mighty Swell before. It's really good. Wild Basin and Bud Light Limerita. So the Limerita sucks. The Limerita sucks.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does.
It's 8% though, so that's kind of cool. Mighty Swell and Wild Basin I found at a brew fest up here in Jacksonville right before quarantine. And then Bud Light Seltzer is just Bud Light Seltzer. But I thought it was kind of cool. We're doing like our whole intro into horror and all that kind of stuff. And this is what I imagine Gen Zers as an intro to alcohol now. They didn't have to suffer through the Four Locos like us.
Oh, God. Lucky teens.
They get craft seltzers.
Flight of the Seltzies is what I wanted to say earlier while you were talking, Trent.
Flight of the Seltzers.
Oh, man. All right. Well, let's get right into this week's news. So, Trent, I know you want to talk about this one a lot. Hit us with it.
The Boys Season 2 dropped, but it didn't drop all at once, much to the chagrin of many toxic fanboys out there. So what they did is they dropped three episodes, and then they're doing a weekly episode drop after that. And I think it's either 8 or 10 episodes. But a bunch of fanboys went and just review bombed it on Metacritic and all that other. I don't know if you can review on Amazon Prime or not, but I think the Metacritic rating was like 92%. And then the viewer score, the audience score is like in the 30s. So
wow.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. And it's, that is the reason why. It's not because it sucks or anything. I read up on this. They are literally pissed that it didn't all drop at once, which I don't know. I think it's kind of good because you get them hooked on the first three episodes. And I think you can almost get more of an audience that way because it gives people time to get into the show. So they're really vested in it. And then the last, you know, quarter of the season, they're on the edge of their seat week by week. I don't know. What do you guys think about that?
Yeah. I mean, especially from a marketing standpoint, it makes total sense to try to get them to get them invested into the series with the first few episodes and then go weekly. So, I mean, it extends their subscriptions, which I don't know if that's necessarily a good thing for the consumer, but.
Well, as the viewer, I actually kind of like it because you get the best of both worlds. Like you can binge real quick, but then it's not over in 2 days. Like when Stranger Things comes out, that's going to be over for me in 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
And Samantha's always no, we can't binge through. Well, then what are we going to watch? And I'm like, but I want it. I need it. It's right there.
I mean, I kind of, I understand that, but at the same time, I feel like there are some shows that are meant to binge while there are other shows that you need to take slowly to really appreciate. And I don't know. Would you say, I feel like the first season of The Boys, they just dropped it all at once, which is part of the reason people are raging face. Still stupid, but.
Yeah, but at this point, we should be kind of used to shows coming out weekly anyways. I mean, sure, some do just drop the entire load on us at once, but.
Whoa.
I mean, for example. Whoa. All right, listen. That came out weird.
Odell Beckham Jr. alert.
Oh, no. Jeez. The good old Cleveland steamer.
So here's something that I noticed is that Raised by Wolves, the show that we mentioned a couple weeks ago, that just recently dropped on HBO Max, they did something very similar where they dropped only the first couple episodes, and then they're going to be released weekly, and no one seems upset about that. So it must just be like big fanboys of The Boys that are coming in, and
they've crossed a line.
It's weird to see that. It's like
they've crossed.
It just seems weird to like hold one show to that standard, where it's like it's not okay, and another one where it's like, oh, it's fine, whatever, it doesn't matter.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head. I think The Boys is like has a very strong fan base, so it's just, I don't know, it's like you get the toxicity from like really strong fans, like Star Wars and Game of Thrones, and I wouldn't say that, I'm not saying The Boys is on the level of that, but
no, it's still a relatively new IP. I mean, they've only had one season prior to this. So,
by the way, I wanted to make a correction on something. So they rated it, it's like 2.5 stars on Amazon, while it's like 97% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I saw.
But it's still just insane.
Yeah, it's super polarizing. If not anything else, I think it kind of like turns new people away that haven't seen the show, which fans shouldn't want. They should want the show to succeed so that they'll continue to make more seasons of it. So it doesn't really make sense that they're review bombing it just because they're releasing episodes weekly.
Well, toxic fanboys are fucking stupid, so
all right, true. So big true. Moving forward, I got to catch a fan flick, not by toxic fanboys, on YouTube for free. If you are looking for a good horror movie to catch this weekend or next weekend or sometime, anytime in the coming weeks leading up to one of our favorite holidays, Halloween, definitely check this out. It's called Never Hike Alone, and it is a Friday the 13th little mini story, but it is actually great. I really, really enjoyed it.
So good.
We all watched this, right? Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So sure basic premise, he's like a hiker blogger who films himself going places by himself, and he's just in very good athletic shape, and he encounters Camp Crystal Lake, and then he's fighting Jason for a little bit, but it's done so much like a normal Friday the 13th movie, but there's actually scary parts. There's a little bit of gore, but not too much. I felt like overall, it's just great. It's a great film.
It was really good.
I would even say it does better than some of the original Friday the 13th movies.
I was just about to say.
I don't want to really talk about Jason Takes New York or anything like that, but
what'd you say about my favorite Friday the 13th movie?
Was that your favorite?
And my second favorite?
Yeah, it was really good, and the one of the parts that I liked the most is that this guy actually throws down with Jason. He gets some licks in.
Yes.
And you don't really see that. So, that part was cool. Also, Jason loses his mask at one point. You get to see his face. It's all fucked up. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I definitely enjoyed it, and they're making a sequel like we mentioned last week, so keep on the lookout about that. We'll keep you up to date.
Yeah, if you got 50 minutes to spare, just go for it and take a watch.
For sure. It's definitely worth the watch. Moving forward, we've got a Batman property. I know we talked about Batman a couple weeks back, but just a little update. So I watched an animated Batman show on HBO Max called Dark Knight Returns. Two parts. Each one's about an hour, hour and a half. And that is now one of my favorite Batman properties of all time. It is so good. You have to watch it. It's amazing. It takes place, Bruce Wayne's 55 years old, and he has to come out of retirement because of what's happening in Gotham. And it's just, I'm not going to say anything else beyond that, but I would highly recommend it. If you're a Batman fan and you have not watched The Dark Knight Returns, check it out. HBO Max.
That's one I definitely want to check out at some point. I just recently finished the Harley Quinn series on HBO Max, and I'm I'm hungry for some more Batman content, so I'll be going around to that for sure.
That's another one I will double down on my recommendation for. Harley Quinn, very good show.
So good.
Next up, we've got one of my favorite books of all time, The Stand by Stephen King, is being adapted into a TV show. It's going to be on CBS All Access, and it's dropping December 17th of this year. I am so stoked. If it's anything close to the book, it's going to be incredible, because that book is my favorite Stephen King book.
So I don't know anything about The Stand. Would you care to go into a little bit of detail about what it's about?
So the first half is all about this virus that breaks out that kills 99% of the population. The second half is all about this battle between good and evil.
Okay.
And that's like the most surface level, but it's so well done.
Almost like a Revelations type thing.
Yeah, pretty much. It's really, really good. And it's told in classic Stephen King style from a bunch of different characters' perspectives. So you have, you know, six basically main characters. So next up, Brandon, why don't you cover this one, because you just watched it before we started.
Yeah, sure. So the new trailer for Dune just came out recently. That movie looks like it's going to be a hell of a ride. So I don't know the actors mainly, except for Zendaya, dude, who's been featured in some of the new Star Wars movies.
Oh, let me give you a rundown. No, let me give you a rundown real quick of some of the actors.
Seriously, there are so many famous freaking people in
the
movie.
So Timothy Chalamet, he was in a really good King Arthur Netflix movie. I don't really know what else he's in, but he's really good in that. He's a younger actor. Oscar Isaac, you'll know him from the new Star Wars trilogy. Josh Brolin, Thanos.
Oh, I'm looking at it right now. What the hell? Jason Momoa and Dave Bautista are in it too?
Yeah.
I didn't even recognize him in the trailer. Oh my God.
Stellan Skarsgård. Zendaya. Oh, and Javier Bardem, who is amazing. I love him in Old Country for No Country for Old Men.
Josh Brolin. Wow, yeah, they got some really heavy hitters in here. Holy shit.
And it's going to be a two-part movie release. So they're the first, it's going to be literally like split in half with the original novel.
So in the trailer, when that sandworm comes up, ooh.
That
thing looks crazy.
Is going to absolutely wreck everything it touches. I'm excited to see it. It's just all teeth.
Yeah. I mean, just from the trailer alone, you can tell that it's like, just how it's filmed, it looks gorgeous. It's in a very cool, interesting setting, you know, like on a desert planet. I'm excited for it. I think it'll be really good.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I tried to read it a while back, but it's a little dense.
It was written in 1965.
Yeah.
It's one of those books that's been recommended to me that I've just never gotten around to. But one day, maybe. Maybe I'll be inspired after watching the movie.
Well, let's go ahead and talk about the one and only Brandon.
Travis Scott.
It's lit.
He is everywhere right now. It's lit. Give me the loot. He is everywhere right now. So after being featured in Fortnite a couple months back, he's just blown up completely. He's been featured in the newest movie, Tenet, which features one of his songs that just came out. And most recently, at McDonald's, they decided to make a meal based off of what he orders for his quarter pounder. So it involves a quarter pounder classic with some lettuce and bacon added on, which is nice. And then, of course, you got to have some barbecue sauce for your fries and a large Sprite. So there you go. I also believe it's actually on sale right now at McDonald's as they're promoting it. So
Cactus Jack.
I would be remiss that they would release this and we didn't talk about it. So
McDonald's is a marketing genius. I mean,
oh, absolutely.
Like, just they don't even come up with their own shit. You know, like the whole Szechuan sauce thing. They're like, oh yeah, we're running with this totally.
Yeah,
I mean, they created the Szechuan sauce, but
that sweet, sweet sauce.
Yeah, they created it and forgot about it until Rick and Morty decided to bring it back up.
Just doing a great job of recognizing pop culture moments and like, yep, we're taking advantage of that.
Yep.
I don't hate it either. Great job.
Yeah, I can't blame them. I kind of enjoy it. It's bad. But let's go ahead and move right into the music of the week. So I'm going to go first. I've got a great jam. It's called Runaway by Half Alive. You may recognize the band Half Alive because I recommended them another song of theirs called Still Feel a couple weeks back. So definitely check that out. It is a fantastic song. I can't stop listening to it. Kind of an indie rock dance hall kind of jam. Get down to it.
Nice.
So Brandon, what do you got?
I got a truckload of songs to bring out. Well, three to be specific. I guess it's not really a truckload, but first one I got is Okay Not to Be Okay by Marshmello featuring Demi Lovato. Super chill electronic beat. Very catchy.
Demi.
Would not be surprised if it's all over the radio soon enough. So check that one out. Strange Days by The Struts featuring Robbie Williams. The Struts is such an underrated band. They're so underrated. I highly recommend you check out their stuff. We saw them at Rockville. I think it was either last year or 2 years ago. And they stole the show. They played midday. They weren't one of the headliners. But for me, on that particular day, they were the best performing band. Just his stage presence on up there, just, oh, it reminded me almost of like Freddie Mercury. And he kind of has that aesthetic to him too. Like he was all in frilly clothing and stuff. But yeah, I recommend that. And then, of course, speaking of Travis Scott, I have The Plan, which is the song that's featured in the movie Tenet. That beat rides. If you're looking for something to get you hyped up, check out The Plan by Travis Scott.
Did you guys see Tenet yet, by the way?
No, I'm getting to it.
This weekend.
It's tough right now.
I'm seeing it this weekend.
Seeing it this weekend?
Yeah.
Where there's a will, there's a way.
It's going to happen. Don't worry.
So I listened to Chris probably knows a decent amount about this band because I was talking to him and he's seen them live. But my buddy Ryan was over this weekend and he's playing some music and I really liked this band Bombargo that he was playing. So I've been diving into some of their stuff. They haven't even released a full album yet. It's a bunch of singles, but they're supposed to be releasing their first album. Oh, actually, hold on. Yeah, no, I don't think they've released a full album yet. It's mostly singles, but they got a full album coming out this year. So, Chris, do you want to talk? Where did you see them at? Was it Okeechobee?
Yeah, I caught them in Okeechobee. They're great, honestly. I had not listened to them prior, but, you know, Ryan introduced them to me, actually. They were very fun to see. Definitely a groove. I don't even know really how I'd describe them, but it's definitely kind of like a jam band, but not necessarily a jam band.
Me neither. Shout out to Sister Myers for the recommendation.
So let's get into some gaming news that came out this week. Nintendo is dropping even more stuff. They just recently had their Super Mario Brothers 35th anniversary direct. And now they're sprinkling us with even more stuff every once in a while. And we got a big announcement with Hyrule Warriors Age of Calamity. That's going to be coming out on November 20th. This is something I'm super stoked for. It's plays similarly to, what is it? What are those Dynasty games? Dynasty Warriors?
Yeah, I think Dynasty what it's Warriors.
Where it's like a beat 'em up and you play like an overpowered character and you go around and just crush giant armies ahead of you. But what they're doing is they're taking a twist on it to make it more suited towards Zelda and Hyrule, specifically during Breath of the Wild. So they've already done something similar to this before with the original Hyrule Warriors, but that was just like a mishmash of all sorts of different Zelda IPs combined into one game. And it was more like just a love letter to Zelda in general. Whereas this one is going to be acting as basically a prequel to Breath of the Wild and showing what happened when the calamity struck and Ganon took over Hyrule. So, I mean, I was a huge fan of Breath of the Wild. I am anticipating Breath of the Wild 2, and I can't wait for them to announce when that's coming out. They announced it last year, but we haven't heard any news since then, really. So this will be a nice thing to kind of give me a little bit of reprieve.
Yeah, I've tied the hunger.
Until Breath of the Wild. Absolutely, man. I'm hungry
Please
for that one.
Give it to me. We won't shit.
I'll definitely be picking up Hyrule Warriors, and it's coming out right around Christmas time, November 20th. So it's going to be one of those holiday Nintendo games that I'm sure is going to sell extremely well.
Brandon,
especially considering how well Breath of the Wild did.
That what you talked about last week, that Mario Kart game that's coming out, that where you can actually have the RC cars in the house. I finally saw the trailer for that. That looks sick.
Doesn't
it? Really, really want that.
That's another one where I'm sure like Christmas time's going to roll around and that's going to be a hot item. Every kid's going to have one.
I think it's hilarious because you can still throw the items and then your car just stops.
Yeah, it's super cool in the way they use the AR technology.
Yeah. So well, for all you Xbox out there, Microsoft just, yeah, we know, Chris, get over it. Just kidding. I love you. So yeah, Microsoft revealed the price points for their two new Xbox models, Xbox Series S as in Sam and Xbox Series X as in Xbox, $299 and $499.
I was going to say xylophone.
Xylophone.
Yeah, $299 and $499. Those are some decent price points. I mean, especially for the base model at $299, that's super affordable for a new Xbox.
I wonder what's the... What's the difference? Did you guys look into that? I know that like PlayStation is going to be having a like a solid state drive model where you don't have any discs. It's all digital when you buy your games. I don't know if that's one of the differences here or not.
For either of the Series S or X, actually. I think they're both discless.
Oh, okay.
Let me see here.
I'm going to
take a little look-see real
quick.
Whether
or not I'm actually going to buy one. You know, I built a gaming PC. And I've been looking at the PlayStation too. It looks like a strong contender.
So the Series S, the $299 model, does not have a disc drive, but the Series X does, which might make a difference in some people deciding to get the more expensive model because they prefer to have the actual physical copy of their games. They both have.
It looks cool. Let's see what it's.
The Series S is a solid state drive too. Man, for $299, that's hard to beat.
I like the look too. It's like just a tower. It looks like a gaming tower. It's pretty cool. I will say I'm a big PlayStation fan and I kind of like prefer that look over the spaceship look that the new PS5 is coming out with.
You know, the PS5 is getting shit on for its look, but I kind of like how it looks as well. I like the Xbox as well. I think they both look pretty cool.
I think the PlayStation looks cool. It's not going to look good with all of my fiance's decorations in the living room. Like, I just like that the Xbox, it's just that tower and it's not really out there in your face. I mean, the PS5 looks really cool, but it's very bright and flashy.
So some of the big things that are separating the Series S and X are the disc drive, which the X has 4K UHD Blu-ray disc drive. It also has a terabyte of solid state drive. Looks like the CPU is a little bit stronger. And of course, it's bigger. It's definitely bigger than the Series S. But I'd say it's pretty comparable. It's got 16 gigs of RAM also compared to the Series S with 10 gigs.
Cool. So I'm sure that'll be dropping. So it releases November 10th. So just in time for Christmas.
November 10th. They got the date. Time for Christmas again. It's going to be an all-out console war once again, I guess.
I don't want to go too much into this because we got more stuff to get into, but do we have any like flagship games launching with the new Xbox?
Not that I've seen.
I don't think so either, because they originally were going to do Halo Infinite, but I think they got pushed back into 2021 now, which blows my mind. You'd think that'd be the big one they want to sell for the Xbox right away, but as far as I know, I don't think it has any big hitters at the beginning.
Yeah, I mean, that's the only reason to buy an Xbox, which is important. Is Halo. That's what everybody's always been telling me.
That's part of the reason why I'm on the fence. There isn't any big flagship games. Also, screw you, Trent. So let's get into what we're actually going to be talking about today. So the idea for this episode was that we wanted to revisit some of the stuff that turned us into the horror fanatics that we are today, as well as some content that you could show somebody who's maybe not super into scary movies or horror content, but maybe you want to kind of get them into it. This is a good way of broaching that subject and you know, this entire genre, really. So some of it's a little more lighthearted. Some of it was stuff that just scared us. But I think you will all get some kicks out of some of the topics we talk about today. So we'll go ahead and start off. The first thing I want to ask is, what's the first horror movie or super scary piece of media content of any kind, whether it's comics or books or whatever, that really stuck with you and really scared the hell out of you?
I remember watching a Disney Channel original movie called Don't Look Under the Bed. Do you guys remember that one?
Yes.
Oh my God.
I do remember that one.
With the freaking boogeyman.
The boogeyman, yeah. Uh-huh. It was the boogeyman. And okay, so I don't remember too many of the details or the plot, but I do remember that after I watched that movie, anytime I would get out of bed, it could be morning, it could be afternoon, it could be night, I would literally jump as far as I can out of my bed because I was terrified someone was going to grab my ankles from under the bed.
You got to do the dodge.
Mm-hmm. So that was one of them. And then also, I just randomly thought about this. I don't know if you guys ever saw this, but there used to be a McDonald's TV show. Did you guys ever watch that?
Yes.
The Wacky Adventures of Ronald McDonald. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, baby.
It's real weird. It's real weird. And they one of the episodes, they all get stranded out in the woods and go into this like old mansion. And part of it is they get stuck in one of those mirror rooms where it's like a mirror maze.
It's so weird how vividly I remember all of this as well.
Yeah, that kind of disturbed me. Ronald McDonald looked real creepy, like animation style of Aw Real Monsters, kind of. You had the Hamburglar, Grimace, which, speaking of Barney, looked like a real big furry Barney. It was weird. I remember that to this day.
All right, Brandon, what's the first piece of like horror content that really stuck with you?
So growing up, I was really into reading the Goosebumps books, which I wouldn't say they're necessarily super scary, but they're definitely an intro to horror. And then also watching the show Are You Afraid of the Dark on Nickelodeon. Now, we're going to get into this, but there's one episode in particular of Are You Afraid of the Dark that I will never forget, and it's called Tale of the Dead Man's Float. It scarred me
just
from
go ahead
pools
get
for
into
a
it.
While. Do we just want to jump in?
Yeah, get into that.
Yeah, okay. So it's about these kids.
I don't remember this one. I watched a lot of Are You Afraid of the Dark. It's been so long ago. I don't remember them specifically, but I'm excited to be refreshed.
There's two in particular episodes of Are You Afraid of the Dark that really stuck with me, but Tale of the Dead Man's Float was the one that really was the heavy hitter, in my opinion. It's about these kids. They want to reopen this closed pool at their school, and no one remembers why it was closed. And so they have it refurbished by the school, and it turns out that someone had drowned in that pool, and there's an entity that still haunts it. So once it's filled and stuff, there's like this bloody skeleton looking figure that it comes out, and you can see it like from his point of view sometimes, like he'll be reaching up and grabbing at people's legs like while they're swimming, and no one else seems to notice him. That one got me for a while. That made me very wary of going into pools when I was younger.
Oh my God, I love that. Okay,
but, if we're talking like movies and stuff, I think the first horror movie I saw was Leprechaun 3, which is not very scary either, but it's the one where it's like set in Las Vegas, and the leprechaun goes on a bunch of hijinks and, you know, does his thing.
As a child, though, terrifying.
As a child, there's definitely some gore. There's some bloody parts, and there's a couple jump scares in there that got to me, but I wouldn't say it necessarily left a lasting effect.
So, Chris, before we get to you, I also just want to mention, I used to also get scared of VHS tape covers and covers of books. Mm-hmm. So, like, my mom, I remember when I was a kid seeing her reading this Goosebumps book where there's a bunch of skeletons barbecuing. They're, like, in a backyard just barbecuing skeletons.
Oh, yeah, Say Cheese and Die.
Yeah. And then the cover of the VHS tape of It, and the cover of the VHS tape of Candyman. Anytime I saw that shit in Blockbuster.
I was just about to say, the cover for Candyman in Blockbuster always scared me too.
Dude, yeah, I know. Blockbuster, yeah, I'd see those two movies and I'm like, ooh. Yeah.
I, for some even, reason, yeah, I also have a vivid image of Candyman in my mind.
Just that, the sight of the eyeball with the bee crawling on it.
Yeah.
I'm
good on that. Speaking of which, I want to see the Jordan Peele version of it.
Oh, yeah, for sure. So what are your some of your earliest horror
recollections? So, like, the first movie that, like, scared the hell out of me was actually Jaws. I know that's not necessarily a horror movie. It's more of like a, you know,
hey, it's, shark movie. It's, you'd be surprised. It's counted in a lot of horror, like, movie lists. So,
yeah. So I would say that's the first one. That
I'd say
really
it's an honorary horror movie.
But I also loved Goosebumps books. So, you know, I gotta throw out some credit on that. Why don't we go ahead and talk a little bit about the Goosebumps books? I specifically wanted to talk about the Choose Your Own Scare books. One in particular that stood out to me was Escape from the Carnival of Horrors.
Same, dude.
Dude, that one was crazy. That was so insane.
I remember picking that one up from the book fair while I was in elementary school.
Yes.
And always, like,
book fairs were like a freaking drug market for fucking...
They were.
Get your Goosebumps here.
they also taught you, like, cash management, because I would never leave without spending every last penny. Like, I could have 10 cents left. I'm like, yo, give me that eraser. Let me get that pencil. I need
give
to
me
spend
that gummy
all of
pencil
this.
Gripper.
Yeah. Oh, those are the best.
I loved the gummy. Yeah. So yeah. That particular one was really good. I really enjoyed it. Did you guys, when you did the Choose Your Own Scares, sometimes I would try to hold pages, like, multiple decisions back to try to be, like, you know, like the branch decision where it would have, like, all the offshoot decisions would come from that. But
I would find myself, like, holding open pages, like, with multiple fingers, like, skimming through it, like, trying to, like, keep my place at, like, four or five different places at a time. And, like, cheat to go back if I died.
You guys are noobs. You had to get the fold. You had to get the fold page technique. You fold the corner of the page.
The only problem with that is I'd forget which ones were folded for what.
Exactly.
Well, yeah, you fold the top one or the bottom one. Come on. Come on now.
Oh, dude. But yeah, the Choose Your Own Scares are amazing. Some other notable just plain Goosebumps books, the originals, that were some of my favorites, and feel free to add on these, but Shocker on Shock Street with the gigantic praying mantis. I loved that one.
Oh, yeah.
I really liked The Haunted Mask. Obviously, they made the cartoon, or the not the cartoon, the live action TV show, which is on Netflix. Check it out.
Just watched the 90s. Oh, baby.
Yeah. The Haunted Mask is great. One of my personal favorites, Deep Trouble. It's the one that had the hammerhead shark on the front. I think
that's
that,
the one,
like,
where
resonated
yeah.
for me because I am from Florida.
That's one where the kid's, like, snorkeling, right? And he, like, rubs up against fire coral. Am I remembering that correctly?
Yeah, it is. It's been so long since I read that one, but that's a good one.
The Mummy Walks. I like The Mummy Walks.
The Mummy Walks is excellent. I had Stay Out of the Basement. Do you remember that one? The plant?
Yes, dude. That one, I remember that one from the show.
Yes.
That one I specifically remember from the show. That one was
weird. Yeah, that episode of Goosebumps is freaking crazy. And then A Night in the Tower of Terror, or in Terror Tower, sorry. That one is, it's got, like, the headsman with the axe or whatever on the cover. And not to forget Say Cheese and Die, Monster Blood, Beast from the East.
Night of the Living Dummy. Classic.
Night of the Living Dummy for sure. Yeah. Oh my God, dude. The Goosebumps was great. I definitely am going to want to show my kids Goosebumps whenever I have kids.
Yeah, and you can show them all on Netflix instead of having to rent them from Blockbuster.
True.
That was another thing I would always rent from Blockbuster is Goosebumps.
Yes, sir. So, any other notable mentions that we should bring up related to Goosebumps, guys?
I think those are the big ones for me.
Yeah, I think we can move on from that.
All right. Well, why don't you, Trent, hit us with Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark? See, I didn't read, or is it a book or a show or?
Yeah, it's. I think there's two. Well, there's a series of books, but these books, the covers are weird. Like, they're dark and black and gray, and they look like they make the cover, the blacks look like blood, and you have to see the cover. It's real creepy.
I never actually read the books, but I have seen the artwork in the books and some of the monsters that are portrayed. Mm-hmm. And I can attest that they do a really good job, and they make it look super creepy and just like they're like black pencil scratching kind of style.
Yeah. Yeah, and they I really can't remember specifics of the stories because it's been so long since I read them, but it's just a collection of scary stories, and I'm sure that if I went back and read them now, they'd still be pretty freaky.
Well, did you get a chance to see the movie that came out last year?
Yeah, it sucked.
It wasn't great, but I kind of liked some of the monsters that they portrayed in the movie that came from the books. I like the scarecrow guy where he turned the other kid into a scarecrow after being basically tortured by this nasty bully for who knows how long, years. And then also the pale woman that was like walking down the hall with the red lights in the hospital. I thought that was really cool imagery.
Yeah. I mean, I will give you that. Stylistically, it was cool. The story just kind of lost me. It was also PG-13. Mm-hmm. So any horror movie that's rated PG-13, it automatically, I'm going to have some issues going.
That's fair.
That.
We're veterans here. So, but again, we're talking about some horror stuff for some younger kids and teenagers that are still trying to get into it, or even adults that just have never really gotten around to watching horror movies or been into horror, the genre in general.
So. That I'm looking at the book covers now, that scarecrow one is actually on the cover of the first book.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And so there's Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, More Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, and then Scary Stories 3, More Tales to Chill Your Bones. These were written in, the first one was written in 1981.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I didn't think they were that old.
Goosebumps started off kind of early, too. It was either in the late 80s or early 90s.
Yeah, I want to say the Choose Your Own Scares were in 95.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just reading this random article about a school in Chicago that banned Scary Stories because one of the school teachers, like, if these books were movies, they'd be R-rated because of the graphic.
We need to stop these scary stories from being told.
Yeah.
Your resistance is futile, old man. So why don't we get into another one that has in the dark?
Yeah. So I've already mentioned the tale of the dead man's float from Are You Afraid of the Dark? Which, honestly, I think the show is better than the Goosebumps show overall. It actually does horror a little bit better. It's a little bit scarier.
I agree with you.
It's a little bit more mature. It's not as campy. But the other one that really stuck out to me from Are You Afraid of the Dark was the tale of the Ghastly Grinner, which is about some kid who has aspirations to be this big comic book writer, and he's teased, he's made fun of for it, and eventually he goes to a comic shop and gets recommended this comic that was never finished, and he's like, oh, well, maybe you could like check this out and get some ideas for this or even like finish it. And it's about this clown who has this wide blue grin, and there's a mystery around it of why the author never finished writing it. And so it turns out throughout the episode, go figure, the clown comes out of the comic and starts wreaking havoc on people. And what really stuck with me and made it pretty scary was the way that the clown would, like, he almost like infected people around him and like made it so they were constantly smiling and like would like drool this like blue goo. It was very unsettling as a kid.
I definitely
remember
how scary that freaking episode was.
Yeah, super unsettling.
I really liked the, it was the one where there was like a bunch of dolls that were all alive.
Yeah.
That one was scary as hell. That one stood out.
That's one where the
me.
Kid moves into like his uncle's house or something like that. It passed away. And then some bullies are teasing him, and then some dolls convince the boy to kind of turn evil, I guess.
Those dolls are terrifying, man.
They are.
I don't know how you side with those dolls, but we'll save that conversation for another day. So another medium that I loved, I guess Are You Afraid of the Dark was not a book, but another medium that I'm a big fan of is cartoons.
Mm-hmm.
And some that really early on I was watching that were horror based was Scooby-Doo. Like, I was watching that as a young kid. Loved that show. What
do you have
about
a favorite
you
villain from Scooby-Doo out of curiosity?
Oh,
I love Minor 49.
Minor 49er. That's a good answer.
Off the top of my head, I don't remember the villains. I remember the one like diver person.
Yeah. I always like the creeper. Looked like Frankenstein kind of. Like,
I know. Yeah, got the guy with the bold uh-huh. cut.
I love the creeper.
He was always one of my favorites from it.
I'm going to change my vote to the creeper. I forgot about the creeper.
Speaking of Scooby-Doo, I'm a huge fan of the show Supernatural, and they have a really, really cool episode in one of their seasons where the two brothers in the show, the Winchesters, get sucked into like a haunted television, and they get put into like a parallel Scooby-Doo universe.
Oh, that's cool.
And so the whole episode, Sam and Dean Winchester are animated and they're with the mystery gang, and they're like solving a mystery in a haunted house, but the mystery gang is super naive and they don't really think that any of this is real. They think it's a man in the mask, but the Winchesters are like, no, you guys will die. This shit's actually real. And it's just really funny because when they finally realize that ghosts are real, they all start having like existential crises in front of the brothers, and like, oh, we probably shouldn't have told them. It's awesome. It's a really cool episode.
I need to check that one out. I'll have to figure out how to watch that one.
Also, we'd be remiss to talk about Scooby-Doo and not go back to Zombie Island.
Zombie Island is my jam.
The best version of Scooby-Doo, in my personal opinion. Bringing the monsters actually
it
to life.
It is quintessential Scooby-Doo.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
You guys remember when Scrappy-Doo was the villain for Scooby-Doo at one point?
That's in the live-action movie, right?
Yeah.
Which is also very good. That is a very good movie.
Yeah.
It's a solid movie. It's okay. Also, a shout-out to, like, I think it was, like, the second Scooby-Doo movie where they're dealing with Wiccans and witches, and there's like this journalist that follows them around for a lot of it, and then he turns out to be a warlock, like an actual powerful wizard, after like them trying to put the blame on someone else for the entire time. So you get a little twist there at the end, which I guess is pretty common in Scooby-Doo overall, but that was a good one as well.
Yes. Yeah, Seth Green's in that one.
Is he?
Love some Scooby.
Speaking of dogs, Courage.
Let's talk about my favorite horror through cartoons. Courage the Cowardly Dog.
Our favorite dog with a big old cavity in his
tooth.
No
courage.
I'm getting me mallet. So I'm just going to go through a couple of my favorites from Courage. We have, let's see. Dr. Gerbil, where he's going around to the middle of nowhere trying to sell them some vacuum cleaners, ends up kidnapping Muriel and bringing him back to his lair. And if you haven't seen this episode, it has one of the coolest endings. It's like a giant chase scene on like riverboats and stuff, and the music is just it's swelling. It's super strange for like a cartoon because it just completely changes the overall like feel of it. But that's a good one. Big fan. This one actually kind of scared me as a kid. Queen of the Black Puddle. It's the one where there's like a witch that can like materialize out of water and like puddles and stuff, and she's trying to seduce Eustace into coming with her and following her to to end up like killing her. At one point, like Courage goes into it and sees that there's like a bunch of skulls and bones down in, at the bottom of the water where she resides. So that one's pretty scary.
Courage definitely rode that line of
appropriate
to inappropriate for kids. Like, it really rode that line very closely. He's walking a tightrope there.
The Queen with the Black Puddle episode was disturbing, and I loved it.
Mm-hmm. That's certainly a good intro to get people into horror, like especially little kids. Like, it's not overtly super scary, but at the same time, like, just it's menacing. It's showing the skulls and skeletons and bones down where the witch is coming from. This one's not super scary, but Courage in the Big Stinking City, where Muriel gets to a chance to go on stage in, I guess it's supposed to be like New York, but she's going to be playing at a music hall. And Courage is sent around the city to go collect a cursed box for this roach. That roach is hilarious. There's a couple scenes in there where he's like going around this apartment building and opening up doors, and just different scary imagery pops up. Like, there's one in particular where it's like a claymation girl, and she turns around and her face like expands and has like sharp teeth and stuff.
Jeez.
Yeah, oh yeah. This one, I think most people that have seen the show know. King Ramsay's curse.
Return yes. the slab. Yes. Also,
CG in that is so unsettling.
What about seeing King Ramsay?
Oh, you know Freaky Fred's in my list.
Freaky Fred's Freaky Fred is probably the one that creeped me out the most. You're very naughty. Also, in that same episode was like the goose that thought that Muriel was his queen or something.
Yeah.
You guys remember that?
Of course. I think, and then I want to point out two more that are really big ones for me. The Tower of Dr. Zalost. It's the one where he comes into town and he's like shooting off like these cannonballs, and anyone it hits becomes super depressed. And so it's a good episode that it's got some horror elements, but it also kind of tackles and talks about depression and how to overcome it. So that's a good learning episode. And then, of course, they did one that was based off of The Exorcist, the movie, where the demon in the mattress, where Muriel gets possessed. And
oh no,
she even does the whole 360 head vomiting.
Oh my
and stuff.
God. Dude, I feel like I buried that one in my brain, and now it's all coming out.
That one was super riding the line of like, is this kid friendly? Because I'm not really sure, actually. This could be on like Adult Swim at this point.
It's not.
No, it was close, honestly. But those are some of the big hitters for Courage for me, and huge fan of the show. Love it.
Yeah, Courage is great. I'm glad that Brandon got to go down the rabbit hole a little bit on this, because Courage was taken down. Like, it was
round one or round two, I think.
Yeah,
it was a travesty.
It was justice. Shame, so. I want to get through these next ones kind of quickly, but other cartoons, I always liked the Tim Burton style cartoons that they came out with, like Corpse Bride or Coraline. I don't know if Coraline was Tim Burton, but it had the same kind of vibe.
I don't think it was Tim Burton, but it did have that vibe. And honestly, like, I think Coraline did a better job of it than Corpse Bride or Nightmare Before Christmas, because it actually has a pretty spooky setting where it has the other mother where like she wants to like take Coraline's eyes and like sew buttons over them.
Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah.
Brandon just took off the freaking gloves for this one. He's like,
I'm in.
Tim Burton ain't got shit on Coraline.
Don't get me wrong. I love me some Tim Burton, and Nightmare Before Christmas is a staple that you can watch either at Halloween or Christmas time. It's so good.
I have a special place in my heart of Nightmare Before Christmas. Like, I've seen it, but I actually prefer it in the IP of Kingdom Hearts.
All right.
Those were the best levels. Did either of you guys play Kingdom Hearts?
I played Kingdom Hearts. I'm a Disney fanboy.
Dude. Yeah, those were some of the best levels. And especially because the costumes, when they'd all be like like Sora had like a pumpkin growing out of his head, and it was just really cool.
Frankenstein, Goofy, I liked it a lot. Mummy Donald.
Mummy Donald, yeah.
I will say, for the first game, with during like in the Nightmare Before Christmas world, when you had to fight Oogie Boogie in the second phase, where you had to climb up the giant Oogie Boogie tower, that fight sucked ass. Such a pain in the ass to deal with.
Dude, speaking of Oogie Boogie, so my first year out of college where I started working at my old credit union, I was in training at their headquarters. It was Halloween, and they had a department-based like Halloween costume contest. And this one, I don't know, it might have been like HR or something like that. They all did Nightmare Before Christmas, and their costumes were really good. And they had the music coming out, and they were all doing creepy dances. And then all of a sudden, Oogie Boogie comes out. Dude, this fucking girl made like a hula hoop like thing and had a bunch of that really, what's it called? Like the wool sacks that you would jump in. What were those called when you would play the games and
the
yeah, like the burlap sack. Stacks, she made a whole like Oogie Boogie costume out of like burlap sack and then made it suspended over a hula hoop around her waist. And they were like friggin' it was the coolest costume I've ever seen, hands down.
Damn, I might have to take some notes.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind going as Oogie Boogie.
And then one of the last ones.
Well, what have we here?
One of the last ones is
go on.
Monster House. That one was just quality programming.
Yeah, I really like Monster House, honestly.
Underrated, honestly. They did a really good job with it.
Yeah.
It tells a compelling story. It's got some horror elements, some spooky parts for sure. Did that one actually come out to theaters? Because I remember seeing that just come out to Cartoon Network originally. It came out when I first saw it. Okay.
Now, up next, we've got some Disney stuff that I think are all staples. We've got Halloween Town, Hocus Pocus, and obviously, us being from Florida, the Haunted Mansion ride at Magic
Kingdom. Dude, I got stuck on the Haunted Mansion ride for like a half hour.
So multiple times. Multiple times.
You're not a Floridian unless you've been stuck on the fucking Haunted Mansion ride.
It's always in the graveyard area, too. Yes, it's
the graveyard area.
Every single fucking time.
You're so right. That's so funny, dude. Speaking of Hocus Pocus, or not Hocus Pocus, Halloween Town, I am watching Halloween Town right now. I've got it on in the background.
Such a classic.
Caliban.
How many of those did they make? They must be up to four or five by the time they actually stopped producing them. Four? Okay. I think I only ever saw the first.
They did Halloween Town.
Halloween Town and then Return to Halloween Town.
Halloween Town 2, Calabar's Revenge. And then they did one when they're in high school. And I don't know what the other one was.
Halloween Town High.
Yep.
I don't want to see that one, but
the first one's the only one worth watching.
Obviously, Hocus Pocus, old school favorite. But moving into live action introduction to horror movies, we've got. Do you guys remember the little vampire with the little blonde kid from Stuart Little?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, so
I do,
dude.
There was one part of the little vampire that scared the shit out of me when I was a kid, and that was when they're going into the tomb of the legendary female vampire that they talked about earlier in the movie to get her ruby necklace. And I remember them doing like flashbacks of her. And for some reason, it really stuck with me and freaked me out.
I'll never forget the little vampire because this is really weird. I'm going to send you guys a side by side. Maybe we'll put it on the Instagram. My youngest brother, Tyler, when he was a kid, was fucking identical to the kid that played Stuart Little in Little Vampire. We lived in
That's
Guam,
awesome.
And all the Chamorro people were obsessed with us because we had blonde hair and blue eyes, and they just don't see that shit over there. But they were particularly obsessed with Tyler because we lived there when Stuart Little came out, and they literally thought he looked so much like him. They literally thought he was the Stuart Little kid. It was weird.
That's hilarious.
Little Stuart Little.
Also, big shout out to the vampire cows in Little Vampire.
Oh, yeah. That's fun. I like that a lot. Also, under live action, we've got Van Helsing, which...
Classic.
I would say...
Not super scary, but...
Yeah, it's more of like an action movie, but it definitely deals with a lot of the classic horror.
It's a good introduction. Yeah. You're not going to get too scared. Yeah.
It is. It's a good introduction. It introduces you to Dracula, to the Wolfman, to Frankenstein, some of Dracula's brides. There's some horror elements to it for sure. And it doesn't, I mean, it's not super scary, but it's definitely something that you could show to someone that's not really into the genre.
I think it's just a good movie overall, too, if you're into, you know, science fiction or horror at all.
This one we got coming up is one of my personal favorites, Gremlins.
Oh, yeah. One of the best Christmas movies.
Right up there with Die Hard.
Die Hard is the best. Thank you very much.
Also, great jokes to come about that whenever you get in college and you have the no sleepover rule. It's the Gremlins rule, right? Don't feed them after midnight. Don't get them wet. And what's the last one? There's three. Oh, no sunlight. You don't see them in sunlight.
Oh my god, that's right.
Yep. Anyways,
yeah, just watching those gremlins after they transform just take over the town, and it not only does it have some horror elements, but the movie is wickedly funny.
Yeah, that's a solid 80s movie. Big fan.
No doubt.
So another late 80s, early 90s movie,
Beetlejuice.
With Michael Keaton.
Also Alec Baldwin.
Yeah, a young Alec Baldwin.
Great, great film. Highly recommend this one if you've never seen it. The entire time they spend in, I guess, hell? Or is it purgatory? Or I don't even know. Wherever the waiting room is when they're dead. Yeah, it's just, it explores the afterlife in a really interesting way. Big fan of that one. And then
also a really young Winona Ryder in that film.
Yes.
15 years.
Winona. And then last but not least is the Addams Family. So in all of its properties, but obviously when we were kids, they had the Addams Family movie, which was awesome. Who is the daughter from that, all grown up now?
Christina Ricci.
You know I'm talking about?
Ricci or something. She was in Casper, too.
Yes.
Yeah, plays Wednesday. She was creepy.
I'm looking her up right now to see what she looks like now.
They had the movie. They had like two movies, and then they had a cartoon show. That was a good one.
Who was your favorite member of the Addams Family,
Cousin
if you don't
it,
mind me
hands
asking?
Hands down.
Cousin It?
Yeah.
I was a big fan of Uncle
I
Fester.
I loved
personally.
Uncle Fester when, what's the guy that plays Doc Brown in, Christopher Lloyd as Uncle Fester is so good. So good.
Uh-huh.
Especially the one where there's like an imposter Uncle Fester. I forget which one of those movies that was, but that was the best one.
Yeah. I'm a big Addams Family fan, excuse me. And, so that's another one I would suggest. It's a little bit lighter, but it's still dealing with the horror genre. Moving into other stuff that got us into horror, let's talk about some video games, Brandon. So this first one, we were having a discussion about video games that had some good horror stuff that wasn't too intense. And Brandon's like, you know, going on, giving different descriptions on what we need, like very specifically, like we need to do something lighter, not too intense, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, what about Luigi's Mansion? And he's like, that is literally
perfect. It doesn't get much better than that.
Yeah, it's a little spooky, but at the same time, it's super lighthearted and fun. But it explores, you know, horror and scariness and all that good stuff.
Yeah, that's a good one. And speaking of mansions in the Mario universe, Mario 64 in particular, there's this level called Big Boo's Haunt, where it's a haunted mansion full of the boos, the ghosts. And there's a room that you enter at the beginning of the level where there's this piano. It's super innocuous. You wouldn't expect anything of it. But if you get close enough to it, it comes alive and starts clamping down and making this loud noise. That scared the absolute shit out of me when I was a kid. Didn't see it coming at all. Made me jump out of my fucking shoes.
I have to throw one in here that I was thinking about actually just while we were talking. How about when you go in Pokemon to Lavender Town to the Pokemon?
Yeah,
you know, Ghost I mean, Tower.
Even today, there's creepy pastas and all sorts of things about Lavender Town. Like they had like the music like made little Japanese kids suicidal and stuff. Like I mean, obviously this is all just internet hearsay and whatnot. But
yeah, Lavender Town and Pokemon, that's a great one. The music was creepy, especially when you're going through the museum. Sure. And then in the museum, I hated it. Did you guys hate walking through caves in Pokemon? Remember?
Pokemon? Yeah, because every other step was a Zubat.
Yeah, and then in Lavender Town and Museum, they were all Ghastlies. And the thing about the museum is you couldn't buy the repels. In the caves, you could buy repel. And you wouldn't run into a shit ton of caterpillars and weedles and shit. But if I remember correctly, correct me if I'm wrong, but in the museum, you couldn't do that.
I don't know if you could do that, but I do need to correct you that it was not a museum and actually a burial ground for Pokemon. So it was the only time in Pokemon where they confirmed that Pokemon do die. They speculate also that your rival is going there because his Raticate passed away and he was burying it. Because you never see it again in the series.
That's the second time this episode that you've brought up repressed childhood memories. Because
I'm so sorry.
Definitely used a museum as a cover for that shit.
Trent's like, I love the museum. The art pieces were cool. I don't know why there were ghosts.
Allow me to enlighten you to your dark past.
Okay, so let's move on from Pokemon. Definitely love playing some Gengar in Pokemon, though. Shout out Gengar.
Oh yeah, one of the best.
Let's talk about some Zelda, shall we?
Yeah, these are some big ones for me. So Zelda in Ocarina of Time, there are two levels in particular that are very, very spooky. And that's when you go in the well in Kakariko Village to go find the Lens of Truth. You go down this dark well, and the way that they did it is both the well and the Shadow Temple, they have bones all around the walls, and they talk about like Hyrule's bloody past. They have skull enemies. They have the re-deads, which are basically zombies that make you freeze whenever they scream and they jump on you. There's even like pits in the well area where there's like this acid that hurts you if you're standing on it for too long. It's spooky. I would even say that, like, it may have been too mature at the time for kids. Just the way they talked about the bloody past and how the sins of Hyrule are buried in the Shadow Temple.
A lot of that stuff when you go back and re-examine your childhood.
Yeah,
stuff,
it's true.
Like, man, that was some dark shit.
It's like, just let the children see the death.
Get them accustomed to it.
Yeah, don't sugarcoat it. Speaking of Zelda, Majora's Mask as well. So Ocarina has times in it where it can be spooky. I would say Majora's Mask, there is majority of the game deals with some horror elements to an extent. Even putting the masks on of the fallen heroes that you find throughout the game, the first time you put them on, like the transformation sequence is terrifying. Like it shows Link screaming and like this spooky, creepy face of the hero comes up. And then once you get into like Ikana Valley and some of the last areas of Majora's Mask, there's a graveyard where it's full of skeletons. You go into this fallen kingdom that's been destroyed. And there's also the ever impending doom of the moon falling down on Clock Town. That's always in the background. You can't really escape it. There's a timer showing when the world's going to end. And the only way to get around it is by going back in time. But yeah, two games that definitely deal with horror in a unexpected way, especially for Zelda.
Yeah, for sure. I it's kind of funny you brought up the sense of impending doom for Majora's Mask.
Give
you a clock to count down, so you're like, I'm gonna die soon.
Yeah, it's like you can never forget about it. It's always there. It's always showing you. And if you look up from anywhere on the map, the moon's right above Clock Town, and it's coming. I mean, you have to do something before it drops.
Oh Lord,
go back in time and start it all over again. Oh Lord, here it come now.
All right, so let's go ahead and talk about intermediate horror. So this would kind of be, in our opinion, the next step. If you've graduated all the stuff that we talked about previously, here's what you would kind of go into, and next week we'll continue to follow up with a little bit more hardcore horror movies we're going to be talking about.
Yeah, we're going to ante a little bit more.
We're going to keep raising the temperature all the way till October 31st. So get ready, baby, because it's going to get so weird. Freaking
ready.
So first up, The Sixth Sense. This movie actually was pretty scary when I was younger because it's just like it's so freaking intense. It's like a drama, but it's really like
so
a horror
I'm a
drama.
Big fan of early M. Night. Not a big fan of At the Height of His Fame M. Night. And then I'm also a big fan of M. Night trying to recuperate from The Last Airbender because he made some good shit after that, particularly that Apple TV Plus show that you and I watched, Chris the Revenant. And The Sixth Sense, in my opinion, is probably the best thing we've ever gotten from M. Night. Would you guys?
Yeah, I would agree with that.
I think so too.
It's just got, it starts off so unsettling and scary because you get multiple things. Like you get the supernatural, but also in the beginning, there's a crazed madman that is a patient of Bruce Willis. He's a therapist and he breaks into their house and he's just scrawny and lanky and creepy and in his underwear and shoots him. And
now I can't remember what the context of the scene was, but there was a scene that stuck with me because I saw it when I was pretty young.
I already know what you're about to say too.
And it shows, I don't know, there's because there's two that it could be, in my opinion, but there's one in particular that was a little bit more where the boy is like in his little tent that he makes out of blankets. And there's another little boy there that he starts talking to, and he like turns around and there's like a gunshot out of the back of his head. And like, you can see how
like,
he died.
You want to play with my dad's gun? Yep.
That is the exact one I was
super scary. Oh my god.
I actually
freaked
was thinking of another one that scared me more.
Are you thinking of the under the bed thing?
Even I thought the scariest part of the whole movie is when he got up in the tower. And they locked him in there and he was with someone.
Also, another one I would say is like when they're walking around the school and he like first starts saying like he can see dead people and like he looks past Bruce Willis and there's this three people that are
that's
just
the one I was
going
to mention. That's the one that stuck with me when I went to sleep, like the three people.
Yeah, that one
is number two on my list of scares outside of the, hey, you want to play with my dad's gun, Chris, when he gets trapped.
Yep, that's
the boys are teasing him and he gets trapped in like the cupboard under the like attic or whatever.
Yeah,
that shit was also scary. Sixth Sense is it's not, I don't know. I mean, intermediate horror. We might be dicks here recommending.
Well, we got to give them something. These are things that are not like way over the top, scary, gory, bloody. They do delve into those topics. I would say the next one is a little bit less scary. It's more of a thriller than anything else.
So Signs is actually what I would consider the first straight horror movie I ever saw. My parents rented it and I begged them to let me watch it and they did. And I was so freaking scared afterwards because the scene that stands out to me in this one, there's two. The first is when you get the first alien reveal and Joaquin Phoenix and Mel Gibson are watching a news channel. And they show like a quinceañera or something. And you just see freaking alien walk by and look at the camera. And when Joaquin Phoenix is underrated in this movie, when he sees that, he like grabs his mouth and jumps back out of his chair and he has like terror in his eyes. That scene in particular stuck with me. And then the other scene I'm thinking of is when the aliens are finally coming. And they barricade themselves in the basement. And
yep, this is the scene that got me.
And the kid's standing next to like the furnace, and the alien comes out of nowhere, and you just see the hand grab his neck. Oh, yeah.
Yep. That and when same scene while they're in the basement, and Bruce Willis takes the knife
to
look under the door to see the reflection from the knife. Ooh, gave me the willies.
So after I had watched that movie, I asked my parents if I could sleep in their room, and me and my mom are kind of demented. We really enjoy scaring people. We would scare my brothers all the time. She would scare me all the time. I scare my fiance a lot. And I went in my bedroom to go get my pillows and stuff. And there's like a dark hallway that led to their room. And she jumps out and scares me. And I freak the fuck out. But what really got me is in the middle of the night, I hear a crash. And in the movie, for some reason, the aliens can't get out of cupboards. And it turned out that one of our shelves in our pantry had completely fallen apart and crashed in the middle of the night. And so I'm like 12 years old thinking, or like 11 years old thinking, I am dead. It's over.
All right, let's get into our last recommended intermediate horror. This one is a little sus in my book because I would say this is a straight up horror movie. We're getting into like some real territory here, but it's not too bad. And
I would be remiss. I'm sorry.
Oh,
go ahead.
No.
I didn't speak up earlier, but I would be remiss to not mention during Signs. When I was like 12, 13, when that movie came out, we had like a church lock-in at the church I went to. So we were all there and we played that movie, and no joke, I got a hold of the remote and replayed the scene where he's chopping the fingers off under the pantry door like 25 times. And everyone was just screaming, just literally shrieking. And it was just, I could not stop laughing, which goes to show what a horrible sense of humor I have. But that memory just stands out. So I wanted to shout that out. So
you guys watched
that. Good shout.
During a lock-in, which those church lock-ins were great. And there was, you put a bunch of teenagers together, you know, never mind. I'm going off on a tangent. I don't want to go into territory.
Never mind.
So going into a little bit deeper into the horror as a recommendation for our intermediate, if you've seen all the other stuff, you think you can start getting into the big boys, the big boy league of horror, we recommend Scream.
I think we ended on Scream with a really, like, I think that's a really good progression. I think so too. Right, Brandon? It might be really on the cusp, but if you look at other slasher films, I think it's probably one of the most, if not the most mild of the greats in terms of slasher flicks.
It is, and I think it does a good job of being a more of a mild one because it is, in a sense, it's almost like, it's not a parody, but at the same time, it does parody other slashers, and that's why it became so big at the time, because Wes Craven was known for putting out Nightmare on Elm Street and its multitude of sequels, and so it was kind of like taking those genres and with some tongue-in-cheek.
It's not even necessarily a parody. It's a commentary, you know?
Yeah, it is a commentary. It is more of a commentary.
Scream 5, I know we talked about it on the podcast before, but all of the original cast is returning. Well, the ones that are still alive.
I'm excited for Scream 5. I thought Scream 4 was awesome. I love the intro for Scream 4 when it kept going back and forth. Like, it's like Slasher 2, Slasher 3. Like, like they're showing commercials for the previous films that were meant to be like mockumentaries of the original Scream.
Right.
Yeah, so that's our recommendation for getting into some intermediate horror and basic horror also.
Okay, and we hope to see all of you back here next week. That's the bulk of our episode there. Please come check out our episode next week. We're going to be talking about curses and cursed objects and phone calls that you shouldn't answer that'll get you cursed, or chain letters that you don't respond to.
You walk into a house, you're cursed.
Videotapes that you shouldn't watch.
People you sleep with that curse you.
Curse. We're going to cover all of the curses. So tune in next week. It's going to get amped up a little bit more. And make sure that you tell your friends about us and drop us that review on Apple Podcasts, because that helps us out a lot. Thank y'all.
I declare this meeting of the Geek Peak podcast closed. Until next time, pleasant dreams, everyone.